Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in. So much is happening, and I really, really am excited that 2017 is wrapping up with such a huge, with a bang, okay? The stuff I've covered on various shows that has to do with UFOs and basically, you know, fringe type stuff, and it shouldn't be, but that's still where it is. It was so nice to see the coverage given to the article that the New York Times came out with by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal. And they each got a separate interview. I think Ralph's was on CNN, Leslie, or maybe Leslie's was CNN and Ralph was on NBC Today. Anyway, they each got a little package. And at the same time, though, this isn't Leslie's first trip. It's the book she wrote that I also interviewed here on Conscious Living. I think it was 2011 on UFOs, pilots, generals, and government officials go on the record. I think that's the title, but UFOs. And just on all of that stuff, these are guys with titles. These are guys with experience, with the knowledge base to understand if they see something that really goes beyond our capability. And the stuff that they were talking about gave them a lot of just complete and total, I think, they were baffled at what they were seeing. Total incomprehension of what the heck is this stuff? Who is it? Where is it coming from? How is it happening? So the stuff that she covered, and I'm not going to go into details, but these kinds of incidents that have been reported for years and then just made fun of and written off, and watching the mainstream news media in the United States cover the stories, and initially seeing whoever the news person is for that particular show still having an issue with kind of a nervous laughter, making a little joke, a lighthearted aside, and then, chuckle, because they're still concerned about their image and that believing in a UFO or that kind of thing is still a taboo, and it still makes you weird. And yet, when you're looking at the pedigree of the people who do believe, who have had experiences and say, this isn't a joke and this isn't a fiction, it isn't imagination, it's real. So what I did was I posted on Wendy's Coffee House, the blog that I do, that website. I posted some links and some background and some stories just so you can do your own due diligence and read some of these things. It doesn't make you automatically stupid or ignorant or weird to be interested or curious about something. I think that's part of this thing is why shut down the curiosity? Why shut down the conversation? The easiest way to do that, why? Because you don't want to go there. The easiest way to shut it down is to try and discredit it or make it seem in some way, shape, or form frivolous and, oh, this is just goofy that we're talking about this. And so that happens a lot. And it's a very effective way of shaming somebody and saying you have no value because you're interested in things that we don't care about. That's okay. And that doesn't stop me. Obviously, I'm talking about it. The New York Times broke the story on Saturday. All right. So that's a really cool thing because usually weekends are just a little slow. So it was guaranteed to stand out. Now, of course, this conspiracy people are saying, oh, this is a false flag. Or, is this something else that's going to happen? We're going to, okay, I'm not even going to get into what they're saying. But there's that aspect as well. The thing is, these incidents and these encounters have been happening for a long time. And they have been talked about. And they have been shared. And they have been, in some way, shape, or form, being investigated. It's just not everybody is public about it. And that's what this story covered, that for several years, from I believe it was 2007 to 2012, this basically black ops, you know, dark, secret, hidden, unpublic investigation department had been operating and researching sightings. People who had encounters, they were questioning. They were trying to do some background, just trying to, you know, the typical investigation of what's happening? Inquiring minds want to know. And getting facts and figures and seeing if they could get any evidence and those kinds of things. Now, it doesn't mean it hadn't been happening somewhere else. But this the reason it came to light is because the guy who was actually heading and in charge of this department said he'd had enough. And he decided to go join Tom DeLonge's group. And that was, at least that's the story, the upshot of the story, is that when he was frustrated with the way this was headed, he decided to join a group that's being very upfront. I think he's raised $200,000 by now or so. They were looking for investors. And again, the easiest thing for me to do is put the links on the page so you can check out some of this too. I think one of them, okay, one, I did Lynn Andrews and Robert Taylor, where I also interviewed them for Empower and KCMO. So it's like two separate interviews, and there's different information on each interview. So it's not like it, you know, is redundant. Not only that, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. The deal with I'm going to shift gears for a moment. The deal with the Sacred Oracle cards, Sacred Vision Oracle cards. Lynn Andrews is a shaman, and Robert Taylor is Native American. His background is part of his artwork. And when we talked, actually the story I had read was a polite version of what was said to him. When he was first getting started as an artist, he took a class and the teacher asked him, "Why do you keep drawing Native Americans? Why do you keep drawing Indians?" And so when I repeated that to him, because that's what the article said, he said, well, he was a little bit more blunt. He said, "Why do you keep drawing savages?" And he said he left the class. And I thought, you know, that was, yeah, a good reason to leave the class. So from then on, he names the artists that he's influenced by. But he developed his own style, his own work, his own method, and his own vision, and incorporates that into his work. And so when you see it, it's very profound and powerful, and messages that are in some way universal of the human spirit of what happens. But they also bring in that shamanic element, the ideologies. And he'd bring symbols and signs of many religions saying that this is how the Native American religion works. And this is how all religions come into play as unifiers, not as isolating us and separating us, but they're meant to bring each element together in a unique way. And that's what comes through in his art. So seeing that in the cards and feeling that energy, because for me, as a channel, as this intuitive, the background, these things are sensible. You can get an instant, in some ways, instant connection, an energetic link. And because of Lynn's work, the shamanic work that she has been doing and has learned from many different cultures who are medicine women, shamanic practitioners, she's been doing this for now, 30 or 40 years. So she brings a huge archive of wisdom, esoteric knowledge to the equation. And so in creating the cards, putting her words with his images, they're really a very powerful set. And I set them aside because for me, Native American energy is heavier. It's a more intense, a more grounded, earthy, very vibrant kind of energy. And so when I work with that energy, then I feel things in a much more intense way. Hard to put words to some of this, but this is the way I can give you a way to relate to it. But it's because it's a very earthy and connected to the planet type of being religion, being in the moment, sensing the moment and sensing all that's around us. And so to me, it's very powerful. And when I worked with the cards, when I finally, and then not only that, spoke with Lynn and Robert, it brought this other energy into the equation where I had a vision, and the vision was amazing. My eyes are wide open. But what I'm seeing in these little circles in both, you know, in both eyes, the very circle in the center of my frame, my viewpoint, I'm seeing this like a whirlpool of colors coming together. And as the colors come together, they're deep jewel tones. And then the tones create an image or a picture. I'm thinking, gosh, I need to draw this. But it happens so fast, and I'm trying to get the intensity of the moment. Drawing takes me out of it, so I just go with it. And in that, there's two visions that are just the colors and the working and the shapes and patterns. The third one is an image of a man. And the man is wearing, basically, it would be a dress shirt, but it's a Western style type Western, not the button down collar, but a different style of collar around the neck. And it's a plain shirt. And he has one hand in front of him, almost twisted to the side, like he's turned his body's turned halfway. And then the head crosses over the opposite way. It's almost like as you would, you know, come across to give an introduction to a partner, and as you, before you bring your, swing your arm around to say, may I have this dance? It's that kind of that. So it's a playful little introduction is the best word I can say, invitation. And I'm thinking, okay, here's the new teacher. Sometimes it just means here's the new lesson. Here's the new opportunity, but something new coming into play. And he didn't let me see his face. His face was turned. I only saw the very part of the cheekbone, the profile. So, but that's a kind of, and it was living, a vivid and rich imagery. So that's the difference between a vision and maybe a memory or a dream or something. It's like it comes to life in front of you. So you see these things happening. Your eyes are wide open. You're not meditating. You're not asleep. You're having an engagement, an encounter with reality. It's showing you a picture. So that was what I had. Some of the way I can describe how those cards are much more activating and energizing, and they're interactive. So for me, that is a very efficient type of, I guess, relationship with a power tool, an oracle, because it speaks to me and it works that way. It may for you, but everybody has their own unique connection with energy. And for me, that one is the best, one of the best that I have been able to access here recently. So the other thing, going back to the information in the news with this disclosure, because this is what it is like for all of the media outlets to start picking this up. It went viral by Sunday night. There had 7 or 8 different mainstream media outlets had tagged onto the story and either given their own spin or repeated it and given a link. And so then you find out as the story continues to break and hits the media on the daytime, primetime talk shows and morning shows for the U.S., then you find out that there are, I guess, more connections to the story. And some of the stuff that was coming out was about Robert Bigelow, who is a very rich American businessman who happens to fund things that are oriented towards space travel and space exploration. And he is one of the financiers or, you know, the people interested in this type of work and has been doing his own research for years. The thing behind that is that his grandparents saw a UFO. And so this is the fun thing about this is once you have an experience and you know someone or you have your own experience, then all the stuff about making fun of it, making light of it, trying to discredit it, trying to devalue it, trying to dissuade and provide disinformation saying, well, so many people saw this and they just saw the shooting star, or it was just a reflection of something else, or it's something that we probably have and it's just not public. You know, it's one of our projects. Those kinds of things are not helpful, but they're a distraction, because when you've had your own experience, then you know, and nobody else can take it away from you. Because with him saying, well, grandpa and grandma, been there, done that. So everything else is pretty much non-essential, because I have my own authorities and I have my own witnesses and my own information and my credible sources right here in my family who are saying, yes, this is real. And so he takes it upon himself to start, because of having a nest egg, the ability, the financial backing to explore this more, then he is doing his own work trying to take us to the next level. And at this point, the technology that they're seeing in the video that they showed is pretty impressive. The pilots who were looking at this, I think the first thing they thought it was a drone. Oh, that's just somebody, you know, it's a drone. And then they're realizing, well, wait a second, look at the way that thing turns. And then there's more of them. So it's like a fleet. And I might be, you know, making a composite of some of the video that they've shown. But the bottom line was one of the pilots said, I don't know what it was, but I'd like to fly one. It's like, yeah, sign me up. So those kinds of things are when we finally have an idea that, yes, these are the studies they have, these are the things that they cannot explain, and this connects dots that a lot of folks have been laughing at and saying, well, this is just all fiction, until the stories come out. And the same thing happened with Uri Geller when he was saying, well, this is what I did, and I can't talk about it because it's still classified. And so he was ridiculed, saying, well, you know, he's just very arrogant and that's all a fiction. And then the CIA files are declassified, and lo and behold, some of the stuff that he did was absolutely amazing. The kinds of prompts that he was given to determine whether or not he had psychic ability. And, you know, here, describe this, and what do you see, and what are you picking up on? And there was one where he drew a bunch of grapes, and it was just spot on. There was just those kinds of things until the public gets to see the dots that have been missing. They'll put a few out there. They just won't connect anything. Until that comes out, then a lot of these folks just end up sounding like they might be a little more arrogant and making things up, or in some way, shape, or form, exaggerating something. But this isn't what we're going through right now. This isn't an exaggeration. It isn't an effort in futility. It's us connecting our dots and finally getting some kind of substantiation, some kind of credible evidence that, yes, there's a lot going on here. And some countries are more public with their records and more forthcoming. There's this, I think, a myth that public would be too frightened and too infantile to be able to deal with something of this nature, because we're just not ready for it. Well, I don't know. If you look at some of the politicians, I don't know that they're ready for it either. And they're the ones who are kind of trying to supposedly keep this from us. No, I think it has more to do with, it takes a massive effort to coordinate any kind of research project to go after and intelligently investigate and intelligently follow up and do the math to piece these links together. And that's where we are. So in so many ways, we are still on the very, very cusp, the very tip of our process of investigating, of learning, of evaluating, and then coming to some conclusions beyond that. But it isn't, I don't think, something we can blame on politicians. We can blame on, those are our fellow people, okay? So it's more a thing of saying, we just have to be more comfortable and confident in our own efforts to investigate and explore and do more collaborating and bringing people together so that we can have a better idea and more the volumes of the material that we have in many different countries. If we have more of a collective effort, then we get a bigger picture. And it was great when I interviewed Cheryl Costa, because the new book that she has out, and it's only for the USA, okay, the UFO Sightings Desk Reference from USA 2001 to 2015. They've gone through, and they've gone through with the MUFON records and charted and graphed and put into form the sightings and where and when. And then she's got, I think the counties are in there. They're planning to do a follow-up, which this is a tedious effort. And her companion, Linda, is also working with her, and she does a lot of that fine tuning and linear stuff puts it helps put this together between the two of them. They've given a really nice support reference to figure out how many sightings and, you know, if there's a trend, is there a trend? Yeah, there's a lot of sightings on the 4th of July. Okay. That just makes sense. But aside from that, is there a day that's more prevalent? Is there a part of the country? And what they found out was they're all over. There's nobody left out with this. So the sightings are just a matter of, in some ways, being in the right place at the right time, but also a matter of routine. People who are more likely to be out walking their dog or taking a smoke break, they tend to be looking up at the right time to see these things. Where other people going through their daily routine, how many times do you look up at the sky? Really? And how many times in the area you are, is the sky clear? So some of this has to do with opportunity and then a habit. There's so many times when I know I go out throughout my daily, my routine, my daily, whatever it is, and I don't look up. Well, that's a big factor. And then at night, maybe you don't have to go out at night, at least not out in the middle of the night when the stars are clear and there may be fewer lights from the city or lights from suburbs, whatever, you know, interfering with this. If you go out in the country and go camping, or if you're already living in a remote area, rural area, you've got a better opportunity to see things than you do if you're in the city where things aren't quite so spectacular. But that's one thing that does make a difference too. Even then, people in urban, suburban areas do report UFOs. And if you've had an encounter, like mine was different. It's inside the house. And I saw something that was, I can't remember if it was Russia, Prague. It was a sighting very similar to mine. And it popped up as I was doing a search of this indoor light lit up little small thing that was lit up and sounded very similar to what I reported. The deal that I knew that made mine completely and totally not of this realm was when it went through the window. It went from 1 second looking at it, the next second it's outside the house. I can see the lights glowing through, and it looked just as concrete, physical, real as my hand in front of my face. This object was not something that was transparent or that was smoke. You know, it wasn't a cloud. It wasn't just one of those little ghosts. It looked like a physical, real piece of equipment. And in 1 second it was there, the next second it's outside. That's what I knew. There was no way I was going to get a picture of it. But those kinds of things happen, and we have no explanation for them. But the more we compare notes, connect the dots, the more information we can start to build piece together. And so what happens with all of this coming out now, it makes the stories a lot more powerful, because instead of discounting them, all of a sudden there are references and cross references to people who've been involved. And that's where the Robert Bigelow, he did that for CBS, a story that was, that, you know, when they do the profiles, that was put out in May. And some of there were comments that I saw, some of the comments about that afterwards, I think somebody tried to narrow the focus, because he was saying he was interested in UFOs and they're researching them. And yes, he thinks that we have aliens among us, and that this is, and somebody said, well, the interviewer asked him, well, do you think that people will think you're crazy because of that? He said, I don't care. Yeah, it's, I got this. So it was, you know, that's the thing with this. You have to have a very strong sense of who you are and a comfort zone with not fitting in to continue doing your own due diligence. So the connection with him was that afterwards, somebody tried to pin him down on that UFO thing. Well, so what are you investigating UFOs? Well, he's involved in a program that isn't supposed to be headline news. It's supposed to be, at that point, a little bit more clandestine. There goes the dog. Anyway, so one way or the other, he couldn't My guess is he couldn't be forthcoming with his answer at that time. And the commenter was saying that is just so frustrating because they get your hopes up and then they just, you know, oh no, that was a mistake. I wasn't really talking about that. Well, he couldn't. And here comes this story that then again puts him back in the forefront saying, yes, what he's doing is legit. It hasn't changed, but he might be able to talk about it a little bit more now if he wants to. In the meantime, the research goes on. So that's what's so fascinating about all this is that when this story broke, then it gives us permission to go back and do a little deeper diving and find out what other stories might be a little more relevant now that we have this as a corroborative effort, as a little bit more of a concrete piece of evidence. All right, gotta take a break. But this is just so fascinating, okay? 2017, what a way to cap it off.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them, but they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, in math, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. Trash. And in gym, in biology, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends.
In biology,
in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, so many questions and so little time. Conscious Living and Power Radio. I happen to be privileged enough, this is a quote, I happen to be privileged enough to be in on the fact that we've been visited on this planet and the UFO phenomenon is real. That's Edgar Mitchell. Now, Edgar was really helpful in establishing the free experiencer group. And I've talked with some of the people, Mary Rodwell, I talked with her before she was even involved with it. But this is something that he was curious about and passionate about. And fortunately, the questions he had, he was overt. I believe in his own way, he was trying to get us to the next level of being more comfortable exploring this and saying, we've got to compare notes. We have to get the stories out there. Experiencers have a whole lot in terms of insight and awareness, and in some way, shape, or form, a mind shift because of what they've been through. And that's also part of the equation. So in putting these together, I just put links. And the other thing that I was mentioning with To the Stars Academy is the name of that, with Tom DeLonge. That's the group that is trying to take it to the next level and exploring. And he's got a real good list of people who are underwriting and supporting his group, and then asking for other people to join in as well. It's just, these things are baby steps. Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid, he was the one who was affiliated with getting this program launched. And he says, if anyone says they have the answers, they're fooling themselves. We don't know the answers, but we have plenty of evidence to support asking the questions. This is about science and national security. If America doesn't take the lead in answering these questions, others will. That was on Twitter. And the other one I saw, Nick Pope, is, of course, he's been thrilled. He's like, yay! He's the former British MOD officer, Ministry of Defense. And so he was sharing some things that I hadn't seen yet. And that one of them was the Air and Space magazine. And that's put out by the Smithsonian, weighing in on that Time story. And so that's another important element. They even went a little further with the story with their stuff. But it's nice to see the pictures. It's nice to see the drawings. And I've covered that just looking at it on MUFON and seeing the other reports that people, and UFO Stalker, to compare notes. What are people talking about? What are they seeing? And how does that relate? There's one that in Kansas has a fantastic story that actually had a residue on the ground. And not only that, one, the woman involved touched her leg after touching that residue, and supposedly the leg that was numb, you know, whatever that was, it caused her leg to remain numb from then on. There's a lot of questions that go with this, and a lot of people who have reported experiences and then just been ridiculed or made fun of or ostracized, you know, and just, but once you have an experience like that, it changes your perception. It changes your view of reality, of what we're all about here. And I'm looking forward to seeing the final version of the Ariel show, the Ariel phenomenon. This is when the 1994 in Zimbabwe, the school children all saw the UFO and the little beings come out. And they ask him, you know, how did they communicate with you? And telepathy. And the little girl, one of them said, you know, what, they were asking her, what was the message? And she said, well, each child responded in a different way. Some seemed to be frightened. Some just seemed to be intimidated. And it's never left the experience. It made a huge imprint. And then they re-interviewed them years later to see how it had changed them. And so that's what's so fascinating about this, having the original experience. And John Mack, the Harvard professor who interviewed them, is also included in that film. It's something, it changed his view when he finally said, this isn't something people are making up. It's each one has a very similar experience. And this stuff is real, because he started getting into the abduction cases. And it was just too phenomenal for him to step away from. The more he got into it, the more questions he had. So he's over there interviewing these children, thank goodness, because now we have a story to go from, at that time, trying to put pieces of the puzzle together. And I think the principal said, well, we don't really know what happened. I'm not going to say it was ETs, but, you know, we don't know what happened. And the kids all think that they know something happened and they saw it. And in the meantime, those kinds of sightings and experiences continue. We just don't always have that kind of concrete support and unified group saying that this is what happened and this is how we experienced it. So here we've had the Phoenix Lights experience, and some people saw them. I know I've interviewed one guy who was right there. He said he slept through it. It's like, didn't go out that night. Darn. but I think it was Steve Hammond who is a writer and writes about some of this, the military type, the fiction, but it includes the military type potential of, you know, what's going on with some of these programs. And he's in an area where he's got a little bit more access to go kind of do a little more research on that. But this is a time for us to start asking questions and start being more confident and comfortable in our conversations. And stories like what Leslie and Ralph broke give us permission to talk about it in the open without having to, you know, giggle and chuckle and excuse ourselves for being not lucid or sane, because we want to explore other topics that take us beyond the tomorrow. You know, that brings me back to what we've got on our forefront, which tells you the technology they have is a little more developed. Scientists developing RoboCat. And this has, I think they've got $1 million from the National Science Foundation, a grant. This is recent, okay? The RoboCat is supposed to help senior citizens because it's going to be a companion. And what it will do, they're trying to figure out what to tell it, the tasks. But one might be to take your medication, call your daughter, or find an object. My keys are gone. Go find my keys. Okay, so this is like a baby step. When you're talking about something that has the ability to go from one inside the house to outside the house in a nanosecond. So anyway, that's one of our advanced science projects. The other thing, Pet Translator, they think this is part of a big think project. I think I saw it in the Independent, but it could let us talk to dogs within 10 years. Okay. So that somebody got the idea that we might be able to, that way we could talk. Do you need to go outside? And the dog would say, yes, I do. I've been waiting for 10 minutes. You finally looked at me. All right. Or I hate the dog food. Please, please, whatever the cat's got, give me something like that. And then we also just found a new shark, new species. It glows in the dark in Hawaii. Of course, Hawaii is where all the good stuff is. Anyway, the new shark. And that supposedly is the camouflage. It helps them to hunt, and then they can talk to their partners with that special glow, bioluminescence. Anyway, so this is where our advances are taking us. So we have a little further to go before we can go from one universe to the other. Now, we're already doing that with the shamanic stuff. That's a whole different conversation. But that's why I just wanted to take today and kind of wrap up the year of unusual, odd, amazing, incredible, by saying, I think this is a good sign, that this is an indicator that we have people at high levels who are willing to go out on a limb and say, yes, this is part of our equation. And yes, we need to know more and we need to do something about it. Now, the one thing in being questioned about this program, now that we know that it existed, what is the status of the program? Because this guy just resigned and somebody else replaced him. Okay. And he was saying because they didn't like the direction that the program was going, that they needed to do more with it. And he just felt like they were dropping the ball. Basically, I'm obviously paraphrasing and summing up, but he left and that's why he can talk about it. But somebody was assigned to replace him. And then maybe it goes into another department. So it still exists, but they can't talk about it because this was the program and it isn't anymore without him there and whatever else is happening. Good luck finding out who the person is. You have to follow the thread. But that's part of it too. You know, as a journalist or an investigator, you're like, okay, challenge. So somebody will figure that out. I've got other stuff on my plate. So another lifetime, maybe. But I like being able to see that these things do have, in some way, shape, or form, credibility. That goes back to the shows that I have done where earlier, and I'm just going to have to paraphrase, because some of these shows were with Wendy's Coffee House, and some of them are with Conscious Living. But when I talked with Tom Carey, and he's the one who wrote about Children of Roswell, Thomas Carey. And these are kids who heard, just by being in proximity, the conversations about what happened. And I think when I was on the phone with him, he'd even had a connect and new information coming about that mystery metal that they found, that they had seen, that just was beyond anything that they knew at the time, beyond the technology they had at the time. It also, the people I spoke with on the Aztec UFO, and the Aztec actually happened before Roswell. The Aztec UFO was supposedly a UFO, a full-size UFO, recovered and then carted off somewhere where we have no idea, but in safekeeping, and possibly one of those that they were trying to figure out and back engineer so we could do what it is that they do and flit hither, thither, and yon. Scott and Suzanne Ramsey talked about that. And I think that's an Empower show. You can just look it up with the Aztec UFO incident. The other people I've talked to about just, you know, about connection with, potential connection with ET, Marcia Schaefer. She's one of the ones who's talking about how we do, you know, take the next step to become more, I guess, representative and more conscious of our connection to the galactic universe. And the show for that is How Extraterrestrial Reality is Shaping Our Future. Kersana Duran, I talked about, because she had a connection with a woman, Ida Kammerman. Ida. Darn, I forgot Ida's last name. Anyway, one of the first people who had, like Betty and Barney Hill, who had an encounter. And I think she was the first experiencer. It was in 1940-something. And so that is a fascinating story as well. So here you have people who are experiencers sharing their stories. And they're saying that they've seen something physical. And they have had a one-on-one encounter with something that they can't explain. And then I go back to Dr. Artie Sixkiller Clark, who had stories that she shared with people from Mesoamerica, South America. One of them I remember who said that he had contact with them. And not only did he have contact, he went up on the ships and helped with their gardening, with the plants, the botany, experiencing being, you know, helping with that aspect of it. And then there's the other stories that talk about people being prepared, and Artie has these. The lady, I think her daughter, and it may have been mom, daughter, and grandmother, but she had contact with them, and they said they were going to be leaving. They were preparing to leaving. They were changing their diet in order to leave, and then she could no longer find them. And that was it, making preparations to leave, to go, we don't know where. But Artie has some fantastic stories, and those are encounters with star people. Hers are untold stories of American Indians. And so these kinds of stories now, to me, have a little bit more weight, because I'm going to the next level. It isn't just a ship. It isn't just a little tiny, you know, something that we don't know and that we've seen, that we don't know that it has anything in it, that it could be a drone, but with encounters with beings. And that's what makes it even more fascinating. Now, I can tell you, if you have an encounter, an interaction, and it's telepathic, it's a very different telepathic connect than what we normally consider telepathy. I interviewed Robbie Holtz about the Aborigines. And so when I had that interview the night before, I think it was in 24 hours within the proximity of that interview, I was asleep, awake, you know, just getting up in bed, and right beside my head on the pillow, a woman said, "Wendy." It was clear, it was crisp, articulate, like somebody was right beside me, outside my head. So that's, to me, is a shamanic type connect. And that related to that contact with Robbie Holtz and the work she's doing with the Aborigines. And they are known to be, that's how they connect, the telepathy, but it was outside the head. When I have had an ET type connect, it feels like it's inside and there's a vibration and a fullness and a very intense, and it doesn't hurt. It's just, it's somehow louder. It's more full bodied. This gets really difficult to explain, but the other things that go along with it, there's a vibration, there's a frequency, there's a shift. And I've talked about this before, saying that the room, it's like the barometric pressure changes. The air is crisp. It doesn't have the same humidity level. And then the smells, the sensations are more intense. You may be able to smell fragrances or body odor. Yeah, anything, whatever it is, it amplifies it. And that's something I noticed when there was a presence. And that is something unique to each experiencer. But there are other elements that go along with that that let you know that your reality has shifted, that something else is either present or trying to imprint, trying to make an impact, trying to get your attention. The difference with that telepathy thing. And I've had where I've read somebody else's mind. There was a guy who created a board game. He was trying to, it was a multiple answer. And when he was asking the question, there'd be like four choices. Well, the minute he asked the question, I knew the answer. And I'm thinking, what the heck? Because I knew I didn't know the answer. But every time he asked the question, it was like, you know, 5 or 10 questions in the sequence. And I have all the answers. I'm thinking, but I was reading him, because when he asked the question, he was looking at the answer. So he was telegraphing. He was telegraphing. And so we happened to be really good sender and receiver. So that connection to me was very concrete. And that's another instance of doing something that's very natural for us that we don't usually pay attention to. And if I hadn't connected with him that way, I would never have known that that can be with some people easier than it is with others. And with him, he was focused on showing me, well, he wasn't trying to, but he was focused on the answer and showing me the result as we're all taking this multiple choice quiz. That was fun. It's also cheating. Anyway, so that part of it was, I think, fascinating. Now, the deal is there are more people doing this. This isn't just me. There are other people doing this. So pay attention. Pay attention. There are people around you doing things that you don't suspect. And some people have the ability to give you an answer ahead of time. And then you just repeat what they need to hear and had no idea that somebody had filled out the blank for you. Okay. And so those kinds of things. When I was doing a presentation at Weston, when I do the ghost stories and tours and stuff, do that annual event, a guy came up and he said that he was really frustrated because at one point he could tell people, he could suggest something and they would do it. So he would suggest in his mind, his thoughts, he could project his thoughts just like this other guy did, only he was doing it at a different level. And so he could get them to do what he wanted them to. Now, I will tell you, that's something you want to be really careful with. What happened to him was he had a car accident and he was really frustrated and discouraged because the ability left. For me, there are no accidents. Something was going on that didn't need to continue. And so that was a way of redirecting and shifting the behavior. So just be aware that there are other ways of holding people accountable for their actions if they run amok, if we run amok, okay? So, but that stuff goes along, to me, with investigating, exploring, and connecting dots with these extraterrestrials or transdimensionals. And as Kersana Duran calls it, ultra dimensionals. There are so many things that we have taken for granted that have given us a limitation. But when we start connecting dots and exploring the stories other people are telling us about their encounter, it opens the world up again to incredible opportunities, incredible potential. This is part of that interview. CBS News correspondent Laura Logan. And she's asking Robert Bigelow, do you believe in aliens? Bigelow, I'm absolutely convinced. That's all there is to it. And you can watch this video on YouTube. Robert Bigelow has this encounter. It's like basically talking about what he's doing and why. She asks him another question. Do you also believe that UFOs have come to Earth? Bigelow responds, there's been and is an existing presence, an ET presence. And I spent millions and millions and millions. I probably spent more as an individual than anybody else in the United States has ever spent on this subject. Okay. And he's not kidding with that. Laura Logan, is it risky for you to say in public that you believe in UFOs and aliens? Bigelow, I don't give a damn and I don't care. So that's where he comes from, knowing as a result of having grandparents who cited that this isn't about what other people think. It's about what he knows and what he is doing to pursue it, to follow it, to bring it to public awareness, to give it a wider venue. And it gives other people who are maybe not quite so secure permission to say, I believe. When it happens to you, you can finally say, it doesn't matter what other people think because it's already happened. I can't take it away. I can't make it disappear. It changed me. And now I know. I don't have to pretend. I don't have to walk away. I don't have to cower. I don't have to be ashamed. I don't have to say, I'm not worthy. I can say, whoa, that was really cool. Wow. Like the pilot. I don't know what it was, but I want to fly one. That's the response that takes us into the next millennium. Falcon. Oh, sorry. That takes us to the next generation. The next reality, the next incarnation, the next upgrade to quantum consciousness. That's where we're going. And so if it takes these little speed bumps and bubbles and skin knees, cartwheels, walking backwards 5 paces and then turning around going, oh yeah, right, okay, fine. Whatever it takes to get out of lock freaking step, whatever it takes to shake things up and get all the kinks out is what we're going to see. Because that's how you go forward. Because that's how you say, oh, I hadn't thought of that. This is technology we haven't even imagined, let alone dreamed. We haven't even imagined the technology that we are going to be seeing in the next few years. They're not waiting for us to grow up. They're saying you're already there. Get a load of this. Guess what? The sightings haven't decreased. The sightings are increasing. And I think it's because more people are looking up and more people are saying, I saw one. So everybody else wants to know, what did you see? Maybe I can see one too. Okay. So there it is. A wonderful capper to 2017, and a fabulous breakthrough to start 2018. Because they're not just out there. They're in here. We are part of this. This is our heritage. It's our future. It's our present in knowing. And we go forward. So thank you to everybody who was involved in getting that little piece of creation on the playing field and on the board so people could either poo-poo it or go slam dunk or go, huh? Because that is what makes life interesting. Okay? And I'll go back to doing all my other stuff with the nightlights and the channeling and the playing and the exploring. because I can't imagine being here without having all these other little things to keep it interesting. And it doesn't take much. It just takes that thing of saying, what if? All right? So what if we're not alone? Where are we going? What's next? I would like to know. Hey, thank you for listening. All right? Check out the blog, Wendy's Coffee House. Till next time, stay curious and keep those good thoughts. They come back to you.